What's happening, Catskill? You're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM. This is Chuck Ansbacher, Broody Duck, signing off.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And today, Rob Gellis, in his Rob Around the County segment, will speak with David Voorhees, the director of the Jacob Leiser Institute, to discuss the history of Claverack Landing. We'll also hear from Moses Nagel of WOOC about the affordable housing crisis in the capital region that's forcing some longtime local residents out of the area. Plus, we'll hear news from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. All this and more after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
Waves controlled on air, in air, channel connection, and the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
The WGXC feedback line anytime, 518-291-9492. If you have something to say about something you heard on WGXC, give us a call right at audio letter to the editor. Call in at 518-291-9492. Leave a 3-minute message and we'll play it back on All Together Now. That's 518-291-9492. To leave an audio letter to the editor at 518-291-9492, WGXC at 518-291-9492.
WGXC underwriting is provided in part by Kravitz & Son Roofing, a local family-owned and operated full-service roofing company for more than 48 years. Specializing in residential and commercial roof construction, repair, maintenance, and replacement, using high-quality and affordable roofing products. Information at 518-567-4026 or online at KravitzandSonRoofing.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Tunstall Studio Publishing of Craryville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You have tuned into the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC Newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. I'm Tom Rowe in Acre. The Times Union Capital Bureau is reporting that Governor Kathy Hochul said September 25th she will get the help of healthcare professionals from other states or countries, deploy medically trained National Guard members, and request federal disaster medical assistance teams if staffing shortages in hospitals and other healthcare facilities increase after the statewide vaccination mandate begins Monday, September 27th. Quote, "We are still in a battle against COVID to protect our loved ones, and we need to fight with every tool at our disposal," unquote, Hochul said in a statement on September 25th. Hochul said she is poised to declare a state of emergency to increase the workforce and allow qualified health care professionals licensed in other states or countries, recent graduates, retired and formerly practicing health care professionals to practice in New York. Other options include deployment of medically trained National Guard members and partnering with the federal government to bring in disaster medical assistance teams. As of September 22nd, 84% of all hospital employees statewide were fully vaccinated. As of September 23rd, 81% of staff at all adult care facilities and 77% of all staff at nursing home facilities in New York were fully vaccinated. All healthcare workers at hospitals and nursing homes are to be vaccinated against COVID-19 with the first dose received by September 27th, and staff at other sites, including home care, hospice, and adult care facilities, are to be vaccinated by October 7th. Read more about that story in the Times Union. Columbia Green Media is reporting a justice of the state Supreme Court late September 24th granted the union representing 5,800 unified court system workers in New York a temporary restraining order against the implementation of the vaccine mandate for non-judicial court system workers scheduled to go into effect on September 27th. Quote, "This is a victory for the labor relations process and reaffirms that the court system is not above the Taylor Law, just like any other public employer in New York State," unquote, CSEA Communications Director Mark Kotzen said on September 24th. The Taylor Law grants public employees the right to organize and to be represented by employee organizations of their own choice. The decision temporarily halted the unified court system from going ahead with its mandate until at least October 1st, when CSEA believes there will be a second hearing. The union made a charge of improper practice based on the unified court system's decision to impose a change in the terms of conditions of employment without negotiating those changes with CSEA. That action requires the court system to negotiate the vaccine mandate with the union. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. The Daily Freeman is reporting that Opus 40 in Saugerties has been awarded a National Park Service Save America's Treasure multi-year $300,000 grant to repair and preserve the 6.5-acre bluestone sculpture at the center of the 57-acre property. Quote, "It is incredibly gratifying for Harvey Fite's masterwork sculpture to receive this level of support and attention through the National Park Service," unquote. Jonathan Becker, president of Opus 40, said in a statement. The grant requires a one-to-one match, which Becker said, quote, "will incentivize the board, members of Opus 40, and the many people in the community who have been inspired by Fite's work to mobilize in order to preserve this unique treasure," unquote. The nonprofit organization has increased its fundraising in recent years and has received awards from various foundations and the New York State Council on the Arts. Its revenue has increased more than 400%, Becker said, since 2018, laying the groundwork for the conservation plan that Fite's work requires. Details about the sculpture preservation project will be announced in 2022. Opus 40 is also working with the Taos Trails Foundation on trail development, site mapping, and public art. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Andrea Macko reports for Porcupine Soup that after starting with the Greenville Central School District in 1986, Superintendent Tammy Sutherland is now retiring. Her resignation is effective February 1st. Quote, "During her many years of service, our school has benefited tremendously from her roles as treasurer, assistant superintendent for business, and superintendent," unquote, the Board of Education wrote in a letter to parents. Quote, "While her accomplishments are too numerous to list, one has only to look at the campus to see how a vision can be transformed into reality," unquote. At its September 20th meeting, the Greenville Board of Education voted for a contract with Syracuse-based education consultants Costello and Silky, LLC, to search for Sutherland's replacement. They will get $16,000 plus up to $3,000 in expenses to find a new superintendent. The board also decided on an online survey to gather input on qualities the community wants in a new superintendent. Read more about this story at porcupinesoup.com. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org. Tuesday, September 28th, there are so many different creative community voices on the radio, including at 10 a.m. from Catskill. Corey McClaskin beams in with the Forgotten Geek Show on the radio at 90.7 FM. Then at 11 a.m., it's time for the Early Electro Mix Show, a new program on WGXC, this week featuring works from Vladimir Usachevsky, Pierre Henry, and John Cage. Then at noon, it's time for the Overlooked Show with Rob Saffer, live from Ulster County in the shadow of Overlook Mountain. Rob has an autumn-themed show today with works from Colleen Brin, Max Richter, Jessica Pavone, and Nate Woolley, among among others. At 3 p.m., it's time for the Radio Art Hour, with new radio artworks this week from Scanner, Neurotransmitter, Barbara S. and Peggy Awish, and Joan Schumann. Then at 8 p.m., Michael Wild is live from the WGXC Hudson Studio in the basement of the First Presbyterian Church on Warren Street with the Mostly Singles show. This week, he'll be bringing some Peru Ubu, Elliot Smith, and other specters. That's at 8 p.m. on Tuesday, September 28th. Then at 10 p.m., Dan Seward beams in from somewhere in Columbia County, live on the Battlefield Earth program on WGXC 90.7 FM. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts Monday there's a 20% chance of isolated showers after 2 p.m. Otherwise, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 70 and a low around 56. Tuesday, there's a 30% chance of scattered showers. Otherwise, partly sunny is the forecast with a high of 64 and a low around 46. And then Wednesday should be sunny with a high near 60 and a low around 45. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Chris Anderson of Germantown, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Network, an empire upon an empire.
I make no promises.
You on the mark.
With one purpose only, to point out and make public the dishonesty, now in complete control of the government of this state.
There is only one man who can rid the politics of this state of the evil domination.
Yes. Hello.
Rojo. Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson. Listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson. And unfortunately, I'm by myself this week. Usually on Bound by Books, I talk with all of my young friends about the books that they're reading and other bookish things. And this week, schedules didn't quite work out, so I'm here to talk about some really great books featuring Latinx characters and written by Latinx authors in honor of Hispanic Heritage Month, which runs from mid-September to mid-October. And so I'm going to share a handful of books that I've read and loved, and then I'm going to share a few that I haven't read yet, but I hear are great, and one that is coming out soon. So I'll start with the ones that I've read before, and I will read you some descriptions for those. So this one I read earlier this year. It came out in February and was a debut novel for the author Crystal Maldonado, and it is called Fat Chance Charlie Vega, and it's just a great contemporary fiction read for teens. So here's the description. Coming of age as a fat brown girl in a white Connecticut suburb is hard. Harder when your whole life is on fire, though. Charlie Vega is a lot of things. Smart, funny, artistic, ambitious, fat. People sometimes have a problem with that last one, especially her mom. Charlie wants a good relationship with her body, but it's hard, and her mom leaving a billion weight loss shakes on her dresser doesn't help. The world and everyone in it have ideas about what she should look like. Thinner, lighter, slimmer-faced, straighter-haired. Be smaller, be whiter, be quieter. But there's one person who's always in Charlie's corner, her best friend, Amelia. Slim, popular, athletic, totally dope. So when Charlie starts a tentative relationship with cute classmate Brian, the first worthwhile guy to notice her, everything is perfect until she learns one thing. He asked Amelia out first. So is she his second choice or what? Does he even really see her? Ugh, everything is now officially a mess. A sensitive, funny, and painful coming-of-age story with a wry voice and tons of chisme, Fat Chance Charlie Vega tackles our relationships to our parents, our bodies, our cultures, and ourselves. And that was just a terrific book. Probably one of my favorite reads so far this year. I thought the character's voice was really strong. It's a really outstanding debut novel, and I can't wait to read more from Crystal Maldonado. So that is Fat Chance Charlie Vega, and that's available to borrow from the library or at your favorite bookstore. And then the next one I wanted to share, I also read this year and is another favorite from this year. And this one I listened to on audio. I believe it won an Audie Award, or some kind of audiobook award for its audio recording, and it was very good. And it is called Clap When You Land by Elizabeth Acevedo, and it's narrated by Melania Luisa Marte, and it's a novel in verse, which is what Elizabeth Acevedo is known for, although she's also written some novels not in verse. And here is the description. In a novel in verse that brims with grief and love, National Book Award winning and New York Times bestselling author Elizabeth Acevedo writes about the devastation of loss, the difficulty of forgiveness, and the bittersweet bonds that shape our lives. Camino Rios lives for the summers when her father visits her in the Dominican Republic. But this time, on the day when his plane is supposed to land, Camino arrives at the airport to see crowds of crying people. In New York City, Yahaira Rios is called to the principal's office where her mother is waiting to tell her that her father, her hero, has died in a plane crash. Separated by distance and Papi's secrets, the two girls are forced to face a new reality in which their father is dead and their lives are forever altered. And then, when it seems like they've lost everything of their father, they learn of each other. And so this is told in two different voices of the two different sisters, and I just thought it was a very interesting premise of, like, suffering this horrible loss, but then also gaining something as well in gaining a sister. And yeah, Elizabeth Acevedo is a terrific author. Definitely suggest her book, The Poet X, and I haven't read her other novel, which the name I'm blanking on right now, With the Fire on High. I've heard that's excellent as well. And we also have some poetry of hers in a collection at the library called Woke by Mahogany Brown. So definitely check that out. Clap When You Land by Elizabeth Acevedo. I do suggest the audio, but I'm sure it's great in print as well. And then one more teen book, Burn Baby Burn by Meg Medina. I've read a number of books by Meg Medina, and they're all fabulous. So I definitely suggest checking her out if you haven't read anything by her. But this one I think is my favorite. It's a historical fiction set in the late 70s and just has a really strong sense of place. And here is the description. Nora Lopez is 17 during the infamous year 1977 in New York. After a freezing winter, a boiling hot summer explodes with arson, a blackout, and a serial killer named Son of Sam, who is shooting young people on the streets seemingly at random. Not only is the city a disaster, but Nora has troubles of her own. Her brother, Hector, is growing more uncontrollable by the day. Her mother is helpless to stop him, and her father is so busy with his new family that he only calls on holidays. And it doesn't stop there. The super's after her mother to pay their overdue rent, and her teachers are pushing her to apply for college. But all Nora wants is to turn 18 and be on her own. There is a cute guy who started working with her at the deli, but is dating even worth the risk when the killer especially likes picking off couples who stay out too late? Award-winning author Meg Medina transports readers to a time when New York seemed about to explode, with temperatures and tempers running high, to discover how one young woman faces her fears as everything self-destructs around her. So yeah, great book, great historical fiction, but like very easy for contemporary, modern day, current day readers to connect with some of the issues that the character's facing. So that's Burn Baby Burn by Meg Medina. And I have a middle grade novel that I want to share as well. It's called The First Rule of Punk by Celia C. Perez. And this was her debut novel. She's also a longtime zine maker and a librarian, and so this is a very fun book. There are no shortcuts to surviving your first day at a new school. You can't fix it with duct tape like you would your Chuck Taylors. On day one, 12-year-old Malu, Maria Luisa, if you want to annoy her, inadvertently upsets Posada Middle School's Queen Bee, violates the school's dress code with her punk rock look, and disappoints her college professor mom in the process. Her dad, who now lives 1,000 miles away, says things will get better as long as she remembers the first rule of punk. Be yourself. The real Malu loves rock music, skateboarding, zines, and chorizo. Hold the cilantro, please. And when she assembles a group of like-minded misfits at school and starts a band, Malu finally begins to feel at home. She'll do anything to preserve this, which includes standing up to an anti-punk school administration to fight for her right to express herself. Black and white illustrations and collage art throughout make The First Rule of Punk a perfect pick for fans of books like Roller Girl and online magazines like Rookie. I also loved Roller Girl. Great book. But this is just a really fun middle school book. You get a little bit about her culture and her connections to punk rock and her interests. And it's just fun seeing her stand up for herself and find her new place in her new school. So that's The First Rule of Punk by Celia C. Perez. And now I'm going to share a few that I haven't read, but that sound really good. They've been on my list a long time, and I'm hoping to get to them this year. We'll see. Wish me luck. Okay, this one is called Cemetery Boys by Aidan Thomas. Got lots of great reviews. I don't think I've actually ever heard about it from somebody that I know that's read it, but it got a lot of great reviews online from people that I trust, and was up for some awards as well. So here's the description for Cemetery Boys. Yadriel has summoned a ghost, and now he can't get rid of him. When his traditional Latinx family has problems accepting his gender, Yadriel becomes determined to prove himself a real brujo. With the help of his cousin and best friend Maritza, he performs the ritual himself, and then sets out to find the ghost of his murdered cousin and set it free. However, the ghost he summons is actually Julian Diaz, the school's resident bad boy, and Julian is not about to go quietly into death. He's determined to find out what happened and tie up some loose ends before he leaves. Left with no choice, Yadriel agrees to help Julian so that they can both get what they want. But the longer Yadriel spends with Julian, the less he wants to let him leave. Aww. Sounds really good. I can't wait to read that. But apparently I can, because I haven't read it yet. I think it's been out about a year. Yes, September 1st, 2020 was when it was published. So that's Cemetery Boys by Aidan Thomas. And I think this is one that I've heard good things about the audio as well. I feel like you usually can't go wrong with audio. They've gotten a lot better at picking good narrators and setting production qualities high. I feel like there was a time in my life where it was really hit or miss with audio, but I haven't heard an audio recording that I've hated in a long time. I used to have times when I would put them down because it just was not enjoyable. Okay, here's another one that I also wanted to read for a while. I think this one also came out about a year ago. This one was more like 2 years ago. And I think there's a second book in this series at this point. But this one is called We Set the Dark on Fire by Taylor K. Mejia. And here is the description. At the Medio School for Girls, distinguished young women are trained for one of two roles in their polarized society. Depending on her specialization, a graduate will one day run a husband's household or raise his children, but both are promised a life of comfort and luxury, far from the frequent political uprisings of the lower class. Daniela Vargas is the school's top student, but her bright future depends upon no one discovering her darkest secret, that her pedigree is a lie. Her parents sacrificed everything to obtain forged identification papers so Dani could rise above her station. Now that her marriage to an important politico's son is fast approaching, she must keep the truth hidden or be sent back to the fringes of society where famine and poverty rule supreme. On her graduation night, Dani seems to be in the clear, despite the surprises that unfold, but nothing prepares her for all the difficult choices she must make. Especially when she is asked to spy for a resistance group desperately fighting to bring equality to Medio. Will Dani cling to the privilege her parents fought to win for her, or to give up everything she strived for in pursuit of a free Medio and a chance at forbidden love? Will she? Oh, forbidden love. Never gets old. But yeah, so that's We Set the Dark on Fire. And that's the first book in a series. And there's a second book out called We Unleash the Merciless Storm. That's it. And it says We Set the Dark on Fire, number two. And the author has also written some books in the Rick Riordan Presents series, the Paula Santiago and the River of Tears and Paolo Santiago and the Forest of Nightmares, which we've talked about on the show as interesting books for tweens. The Rick Riordan Presents are interesting because they are all, he really focuses on mythology in his books. And so then this imprint has books written by people with different cultural backgrounds that are focused in some way around their culture and mix in mythology a bit. So interesting books to check out. But that one was We Set the Dark on Fire, book one by Taylor K. Mejia. And then one more that I haven't read that I think sounds wonderful is The Book of Lost Saints by Daniel Jose Older. And here is the description. An evocative, multi-generational Cuban-American family story of revolution, loss, violence, and family bonds. Marisol vanished during the Cuban Revolution, her fate unknown and lost to time. Now, haunted by atrocities long forgotten, her foul-mouthed spirit visits her nephew Ramon in modern-day New Jersey. Her hope? That her presence will prompt her descendant to unearth their painful family history. Ramon launches a haphazard investigation into the story of his ancestor, unaware of the forces driving him on his search. Along the way, he falls in love, discovers a new sense of his own identity, faces a run-in with a murderous gangster, and learns of each lost saint who helped Marisol during her imprisonment under Batista's reign. Uplifting and evocative, The Book of Lost Saints is a meditation on family, forgiveness, and the violent struggle to be free. And I actually just learned about this book recently. I don't know how I missed it when it came out, but I met the author once at an author talk when his book Shadow Shaper was coming out, and he just sounded very interesting and like a nice guy. That's not why I want to read his book, but that helps. But it's gotten really good reviews and sounds pretty interesting. I also like the sort of like learning history through a contemporary setting or activity. Or in this case, it's fantastical too. I think that's a fun way to approach historical fiction. So that is The Book of Lost Saints by Daniel Jose Older. And then I have two more to talk about. I don't want to give any spoilers for the second one, which is a sequel. But one of my favorite books for teens is Aristotle and Dante Discover the Secrets of the Universe by Benjamin Alire Sainz. And I can read the description for that one. Or this maybe a 3 or 4 years back. It had been on my list of books to read for a really long time, and I just kept not getting around to it. And then a teen at the library sort of shamed me into finally reading it, and I loved it. So really grateful to my bud for suggesting this book. And so this is the description for Aristotle and Dante Discover the Secrets of the Universe. A lyrical novel about family and friendship from critically acclaimed author Benjamin Alire Sainz. Aristotle is an angry teen with a brother in prison. Dante is a know-it-all who has an unusual way of looking at the world. When the two meet at the swimming pool, they seem to have nothing in common. But as the loners start spending time together, they discover that they share a special friendship, the kind that changes lives and lasts a lifetime. And it's through this friendship that Ari and Dante will learn the most important truths about themselves and the kind of people they want to be. It's just such a lovely story about these two young men. I feel like you get such a strong sense of both of them as characters, and their growing friendship together is very sweet. I feel like it's, as an adult looking back at being a young person, I feel like it felt like a romantic novel, even though it wasn't a romance, if that makes sense. Like this sort of looking back at this young, innocent time in your life. And I don't know, it's just a really beautiful book. And that book came out in 2012. So I just read it a few years back, but it's been out for a number of years. And finally, the sequel to this book is coming out. So Aristotle and Dante Dive into the Waters of the World is coming out October 12th. I've been waiting for this book since I finished the last book. But I don't want to read the description for it because I don't want to give anything away from the last book. But yeah, I'm very excited for it though. And so anyone else who read the first one and is excited about the sequel, check it out. You can read the blurb. You won't have any spoilers. But yeah, so that's a handful of books to help celebrate Hispanic Heritage Month, and hope you'll check them out. There's hundreds more to choose from at the library as well, for all ages, from picture books, even board books, up to adult fiction and nonfiction. So I hope you'll check out some books by and about Latinx characters or Latinx history and culture this month into mid-October. But on that note, I'm going to wrap it up for today. I hope everyone out there listening has a great week with lots of quality reading time. And I'll be back next week to talk about some more books, hopefully with my young friends again. But have a great week and happy reading.
that shall break every chain and give I and I the victory. Again and again, ¿para qué darle fuerza a quien quiere matarte? ¿Para qué alimentar la mano que quiere aplastarte? Babilonia tiene fuerza porque tú se la das. ¿Para qué darle fuerza a que se queme el wicked man? ¿Para qué darle fuerza a quien quiere matarte? ¿Para qué alimentar la mano que quiere aplastarte? Babilonia tiene fuerza porque tú se la das. ¿Para qué darle fuerza a que se queme el wicked man? No quiero caminar por calles con nombres de asesinos, no más, digo que no más. No quiero celebrar el aniversario de ningún opresor ni represor de mi gente. No quiero comprar lo que ella me da. No quiero darle nada, ahora le voy a quitar. Son vampiros nada más que no producen nada. Necesitan de tu energía hasta para poder respirar. ¿Para qué darle fuerza a quien quiere matarte? ¿Para qué alimentar la mano que quiere aplastarte? Babilonia tiene fuerza porque tú se la das. ¿Para qué darle fuerza a que se queme el wicked man? ¿Para qué darle fuerza a quien quiere matarte? ¿Para qué alimentar la mano que quiere aplastarte? Babilonia tiene fuerza porque tú se la das. ¿Para qué darle fuerza a que se queme el wicked man? No quiero aprender de memoria la vida de los asesinos más grandes de la historia, no. Siguen escondiendo enseñanzas reales que son positivas y también naturales. No quiero aceptar tus limitaciones a la educación. Le estás poniendo tantas restricciones a los recursos naturales, demasiadas condiciones. No quiero sumarme a la lista de todas tus destrucciones. ¿Para qué darle fuerza a quien quiere matarte? ¿Para qué alimentar la mano que quiere aplastarte? Babilonia tiene fuerza porque tú se la das. ¿Para qué darle fuerza a que se queme el wicked man? Que se queme el wicked man. Que se queme el wicked man. Que se queme el wicked man. La gente malvada se va a quemar, ya. Yeah. La gente malvada se va a quemar, yeah. Wicked people shall be burning, wicked people shall be burning, wicked people shall be burning, be burning, wicked people shall be burning, be burning, be burning.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
I'm Tom Rowe at WGXC, and reminding you that our WGXC 10-year anniversary pledge drive is from October 17th to October 31st this year, and we could sure use your help at wgxc.org/donate to make a difference in your community. We're looking for about 50 more new sustaining supporters to make sure community radio can come your way every hour on the hour, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. 90.7 FM is filled with the voices of your friends and neighbors talking about and having community conversations about local issues and providing all sorts of entertainment, music, and more. If that's something you support, consider a donation today at wgxc.org/donate or make a donation during the WGXC 10-year pledge drive from October 17th through 31st. For the radio, 90.7 FM, WGXC, your community radio station. Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
On September 23rd, 2021, two black trans organizers being targeted by the Schenectady police turned themselves in and then held a press release and speak out outside the police department. Michaela Foster of the Black Abolitionist Directive delivered, with support, this official statement.
Today, once more, residents of Schenectady gather to stand against injustice. Schenectady Police Department Chief Eric Clifford and Mayor McCarthy of the City of Schenectady, along with the Schenectady City Council, have been orchestrating targeted attacks on organizers and activists in Schenectady in a brutal yet futile attempt to silence, disappear, and dismantle the movement for liberation. How have so many forgotten our most recent history and fallen prey to the propaganda and false narratives that these elected officials and officers flood into the streets and social media? How have we forgotten names like Andrew Pierce and Yegeshwar Gander Prasad? How have we so quickly turned a blind eye to the changes and injustice taking place right in front of our very eyes, even after the wake of 2020, when we saw the world burn and rise up again in front of our very eyes for Black lives? And I do mean the entire world came out for George Floyd. The Black Abolitionist Directive and activists in the city of Schenectady stand stronger and more vindicated than ever in our belief that the system of white supremacy must be eradicated like the disease that it is from every inch and corner of this world, and that every single human being should be free and liberated from all forms of oppression. Today, as two of us from BAD, or the Black Abolitionist Directive, and two members, more importantly, of this community, face unjust charges, we must emphasize the recent events in Schenectady. On July 6, 2020, directly in the aftermath of the lynching of George Floyd and the murder of Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery, Officer Brian Palmer arrested Yegeshwar Gander Prasad and kneeled on his neck right here in a self-proclaimed Electric City. Officer Palmer is still currently on the force. On May 11, 2017, Officer Mark Weeks ignored Andrew Pierce as he had a heart attack in the back of an SPD car for 17 minutes until he died. In that same car, he is also still on the force. On April 22nd, 2021, two black trans activists, myself included, were arrested and sent to county jail overnight while being forced to deal with blatant racism and transphobia. Upon my arrival to be booked at SPD, I was told by two officers that they had been quote-unquote waiting for this exact moment and couldn't wait to get me in here and knew exactly who I was. You tell me who's not being targeted, and let's not even get into what happened inside Schenectady County Jail. Transphobia is one of the main tools of white supremacy. Black trans people die at the highest rates in our nation through multiple forms of brutality, whether it's police brutality, misogyny, the patriarchy, sex-based violence, poverty, etc. And let's not even get into the healthcare system. So you must inherently care about the people standing here before you, the trans people in your communities, the trans people in the United States, if you intend to post hashtags like Black Lives Matter when black people die. Furthermore, the charges back in April that we were being brought up on were a result of the use of washable children's chalk at a peaceful protest after the death of Dante Wright. We were thrown in jail for something that people give out freely to children in public schools. The transphobic and racist violence we encountered in both Schenectady Police Department and Schenectady County Jail have left us unimaginable scars and trauma. While SPD and the media continue to string our dead names and false narratives throughout the media as if they themselves are immune to lawsuits, because our community knows how to fight back, as if we are not human and do not deserve our right to dignity, respect, and recognition of our identities. How long will the Schenectady Police Department be allowed to reality, but because they have the vast majority of Schenectady elected officials in their pockets. Schenectady City Council just recently attempted to dox a black member of the Schenectady School Board for taking a public stance on defunding the police and reallocating those funds back to the community, back to the same people who go to Schenectady Public Schools. This mirrors the events that took place on the state-mandated Police Reform Task Force Review Board in Schenectady, in which I and several other members of the community were berated and treated in a defensive and aggressive manner by both the Chief of Police and Mayor McCarthy, and by many city council members after the fact. And it's honestly insane that nobody even knows that that happened. It took place for an entire year across the state of New York. Every police department was mandated by law to have a community review board, and nobody in Schenectady knew about it. The comments made during this review board by the chief, such as, and this is verbatim, "You have no power here. You do not get to decide what goes on the agenda. We decide, we schedule, and we arrange what changes are made and how this goes." Those comments in the community board that were hardly made public to the actual community sound all too familiar when paired with the context of who runs Schenectady and who makes the decisions for real. The city of Schenectady has made it clear what side of the line that they stand on, and it is not the side of the people. It is the side of white supremacy, racism, oppression, colonial power structures, and capital gains. They have made it clear that they see no room here for us, for those of us who fall below the poverty line or at the poverty line, for the homeless, for LGBTQIA+ people, for marginalized people, for black, brown, and indigenous people, and for us standing here today. Those of us committed to black liberation and the liberation of all people from these power structures have been threatened time and time again. And in this moment of reckoning today, I ask you to recall the history of any anti-racist movement led by black and brown people in this nation. I ask you to recall how they killed our leaders, how they beheaded, raped, and brutalized black and indigenous people. I ask you to recall how many Black Panthers were arrested, incarcerated, or murdered by the state. I ask you to recall whose land you are standing on, and how the names of these places you call home even came to be on stolen land. I ask you to recall our faces, the faces of children who grew into adulthood in these very streets, in these very public schools, who played like children should, while becoming accustomed to acts of genocide and brutality in their own neighborhoods. Us, who went hungry, who had nothing, but made everything this city is and everything it has ever been.
Let's go!
I ask you to remember who you are now as we stand before you. I ask you to recall our humanity, our innate and inherent humanness, our flesh, our bones, our eyes, our voices. Remember that there is no such thing as a blue life. But the real black and brown ones stand before you exist, and that we are suffering under white supremacy. I ask you to recall who taught you that your freedom was not inherently tied to mine. Because it is. Today, September 23rd, we stand as a unified front in solidarity with those who have come before us in this movement, our siblings and comrades in Saratoga County as they battle the same injustice and brutality, with the family of Andrew Pierce and the people of Schenectady and with each other. The Black Abolitionist Directive will not cease in our efforts to abolish the police at every level. We will not be kidnapped or stolen away from our homes and families. We will not let this clear defamation of character and false charges snatch away our livelihood moving forward, and we will never be silent in the face of our oppressors. We must remember that whether they paint Black Lives Matter outside City Hall, they ignore such lies behind closed doors and are paid to do it on our dime. We must remember that America was never supposed to exist this way, on this stolen land, and that abolition is the only way to forge ahead and create a world that benefits, protects, and is safe for everyone included. There is no way to reform away white supremacy, the history of colonialism and genocide, nor the bloodshed of this nation. The Schenectady Police Department and Mayor McCarthy can try as they might to disappear us, break us down, and tear us apart. But regardless, we will stand and fight. We were never the ones with the weapons. We have never been the ones unable to see and seek out humanity in those standing right beside us. And we have never been the ones to tear apart families and go home to a different neighborhood at the end of the night. These strategic arrests, false charges, death threats from the police and their fan club, or attempts to create or remove legislation to harm us will up here and in the meetings, marches, and efforts to connect with our community. You can place us in cuffs or in cages, call us by our dead names, and haunt us in the shadows or from behind locked doors, but we will call out the truth and shine a light into the dark. White supremacy has no place in Schenectady, and we stand on that entirely, with vindication and an unwavering dedication to ensure the freedom, safety, and well-being of every human being. But I urge everyone here today, or witnessing this at any point, to remember one thing, that when they play chess, we break the board. That is the official statement from the Black Abolitionist Directive here in Schenectady.
This segment, edited for time, was produced by Jody Cowan for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
The Hudson Common Council voted September 21st to pass a good cause eviction law. The law is similar to one passed recently in Albany and would require landlords to provide a detailed reason to a judge when evicting a tenant. The law passed with 8 Common Council members voting in favor and 3rd Ward Alderperson Shirzaz Nizan abstaining.
Okay, can I have a motion to approve the proposed local law?
I'll make that motion, Rebecca.
And a second.
Make that second.
Tracy, a roll call vote, please.
Alderman Garriga.
Aye.
Moranti?
Is this to set another desk? Is that what this is to do? For a time frame? Is that what this is
about? No, this has been on our desk. This is
okay. Aye.
Nizan?
I'm abstaining.
Rosenthal?
Aye.
Sarr?
Aye. My bad. I was in mute.
Walker?
Aye.
Wallace?
Aye.
Wolf?
Aye.
President DiPietro.
Aye. I believe it passes, Tracy?
Yes, it was approved.
Okay.
Hudson Mayor Kamal Johnson previously spoke in favor of the law, saying it is needed as rising rents are forcing locals from their homes. Quote, "This is something that advocates have been talking about for years," unquote, Johnson said. Quote, "We've seen our school district have to consolidate. We've seen our hospital no longer work for birthing services, losing jobs," unquote. Besides making evictions subject to a judge's oversight, the law also gives tenants a right to renew their lease and protects them from an annual rent increase of more than 5%. Tune in or turn out Saturday, October 23rd to John Cage's Rose Art Mix, realized by artist Aaron Dillaway at Bard College in Annandale-on-Hudson. The performance will be at the John Cage Trust from noon to sunset with collaborating tape players including Twig Harper from Nautical Almanac, Rosie Actor Engel, John Weiss, Mike Colino, and C. Lavender. John Cage's Rose Art Mix was composed in 1965 for a performance at Brandeis University's Rose Art Gallery. The score is correspondence between John Cage and Alvin Lussier concerning preparations for the concert utilizing tape loops. Aaron Dillaway, who's known for his work in Wolf Eyes and many other collaborations, was a former Wave Farm resident who worked with tape loops and cart machines in his residency in Accra. Anyone attending this event must show proof of vaccination and register to make an appointment to be scheduled to see the show.
You can find out more about the Saturday, October 23rd performance of John Cage's Rhodes Art Mix, realized by artist Aaron Dillaway, in the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Monday, September 27th. We are 73.9% of the way through the year. There are 85 days left until winter. This morning starts off chilly at 52 degrees and a comfortable dew point of 48. Some rain heading our way should evaporate before it reaches us, but we could get some splashes, especially in the Greene County Mountains. The late morning and afternoon will be dry, and temperatures reach 76 degrees by 3 p.m. Overnight temperatures get down to the 59-degree mark, and rain begins after midnight with a chance for thunder. Rain ends around noon tomorrow, and a high of 70 happens at 2 p.m. Tomorrow night, the temperatures are expected to drop to 47 degrees. Wednesday will be dry with a high of 65. Thursday will also be dry with a high of 62. Pollen is still hanging around, and levels for today will be medium. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 2:20 a.m., high tide at 8:15 a.m., low tide again at 1:49 p.m., and high tide again at 8:15 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 67 degrees. Sunset today will be at 6:32 p.m. Please keep in mind that number is adjusted for our region and accounts for the mountain. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:44 a.m. Looking way up, we see a 45% chance of a G1 or G2 class magnetic storm today. Some northern tier states could possibly see auroras. Solar wind speed is currently 383 kilometers per second at 8.4 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently poor. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 67. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Next, we hear from David S. Ware from his Surrendered album. This is the song African Drums. Yeah.